The Civil Rights Act gave some teeth to equal protection under the law. It had a section saying that there couldn't be discrimination in public accommodations, for instance, restaurants, hotels, and things like that. It had a section outlawing discrimination in employment and in other housing, in other aspects of life. And, you know, it was famously signed by President Johnson on July 2nd. 2 hours later, you have the first legal challenge to the Civil Rights Act. It's an Atlanta motel operator and attorney named Morton Rolleston.
This is the Heart of Atlanta Motel, which, if memory serves, was on Cortlandt Street.
It's on Cortlandt Street, yeah. Not too terribly far from where the Georgia State dormitories are, just a block or two away from what was the downtown connector.
Like near where the Atlanta Hilton is today.
That's right. Yeah. And it was a deluxe motel, had a swimming pool. It served people from a variety of states who'd stop here in Atlanta, but not if they were black. Because its proprietor, Morton Rolleston, felt that he was in his rights to discriminate and did not want to serve black patrons.
So what was his argument against the Civil Rights Act? And on what grounds is he suing?
It's very interesting. He said that the Civil Rights Act deprived him of his Fifth Amendment rights in that it took away his property without due process or his value. And he also, interestingly, cited the 13th Amendment. And the 13th Amendment was the amendment that abolished slavery. And he said that he was now being put into involuntary servitude by the Civil Rights Act. And so he actually ironically drew upon the 13th Amendment, which was passed at the end of the Civil War.
Rolleston himself, besides being a motel owner, is an attorney, is he not?
That's right. And he takes his case himself all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The case is joined with another famous Atlanta case, the case of Lester Mannix, a restaurant proprietor who, shortly after the passage of the Civil Rights Act, had famously gone after would-be black patrons with axe handles and pistols as they tried to desegregate his restaurant. And Lester Mannix, very flamboyant and very much associated with the hardcore segregationists. Rolleston has a sort of a different kind of persona. He's an attorney. He actually argues his case all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
The court's decision is unanimous, isn't it?
The court's decision is unanimous. It comes down in December of that year. And unanimously, the court says that the Commerce Clause impacting interstate commerce is constitutional and that, in essence, the court upholds the Civil Rights Act and says that Rolleston was on dubious ground when he tried to challenge the Civil Rights Act.
The Commerce Clause is interesting in that because this regulates interstate commerce. It's Gibbons versus Ogden, I think, the early 19th right. century thing that says that the U.S. Congress
That's
does
the right to
regulate relations between the states. And Rolleston was saying, you know, I think the argument was made that, yeah, because your motel serves interstate customers, you fall under the Civil Rights Act.
That's right. I mean, and they could, you know, took, you know, images in the parking lot of the different license plates from different states where patrons at the hotel had come from and whatnot. So, yes, they argued that. He was arguing that he was the victim. You know, sort of an interesting inversion of this notion of rights. You know, while civil rights advocates were arguing for the right to eat anywhere you wanted, people like Mannix and Rolleston, Charlie Lebs in downtown Atlanta were arguing that this legislation, this federal legislation, took away their rights to serve whomever they wanted.
If Congress does have the right to control interstate commerce as it affects the civil rights of Americans, black and white, could the argument be made that, okay, if I don't serve interstate travelers and I'm a motel owner, I can discriminate?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, Lester Mannix said, I have local business. I'm a locally owned business. And they kind of were saying, well, you got ketchup from here and other food products for there. So they put even this locally owned business that really didn't serve a clientele beyond a local clientele into this interstate commerce category.
How is that decision, if it is at all, different or similar to some of the arguments being made today by some businesses that say, you know, we don't want to serve people who are gay because it's against our religion?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? It does certainly, those comparisons, you know, do come to mind. I'm going to beg off. I'm not a legal scholar, but obviously, you know, it does evoke these controversies that surrounded the passage of the Civil Rights Act and these challenges to the Civil Rights Act. I also think this notion of, in this case, the restaurant owners or the motel keepers as victims is something that does feed into a larger conservative movement that does evolve sort of after that fact.
Ralston later sells the Heart of Atlanta Motel for $11.1 million, which I think was a record high amount ever paid for a hotel in the U.S. up to that time.
That's right. And in the aftermath of the decision, Atlanta does become desegregated. The other motel owners, the other restaurant owners are all in favor of getting on with the program and moving forward. Sort of the last gasp of formal legal segregation in public accommodations.
Cliff Kuhn, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.